Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 16, 2015. Authorities in Juba once again threaten to shut down any media houses broadcasting the views of the rebels. And South Sudan's political parties react to the Council of Ministers' decision to extend President Kiir's term in office by 2 years.
The final decision will be in the Supreme Court, which will hold the next sitting on the 3rd of March. So if they are serious about stopping election, let them come to the Supreme Court and tell the Supreme Court that they are now for elections not to go ahead.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top South Sudanese official says the government would be willing to reverse Friday's resolution to postpone elections and extend the term of the president, legislature and other elected officials if the two warring parties reach a comprehensive peace agreement before the current term expires on July 9th. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Information Minister Michael Makwei says the cabinet decided to extend the tenure of all elected officials last week because the two sides might not agree on a government of national unity by July. At a news conference in Juba today, Makwei confirmed the cabinet's resolution may be dismissed if a deal is reached.
Anytime, even after the amendment of this constitution, if we agree, definitely we will build in the provisions of the agreement and the constitution will be have to be amended and we will be operating in accordance with the provisions of the would-be agreement.
At a Friday's cabinet meeting chaired by President Salva Kiir, cabinet passed a resolution to postpone South Sudan's national elections by 2 years. The elections had been scheduled to take place on June 30th of this year. It also extended the tenure of the office of the president, national legislature, and all elected positions to July 9, 2017. The period of the National Constitution Review Commission was also extended for 1 year. But Makwei says the resolution must be endorsed by parliament, which he says will likely occur later this week. Makwei says the cabinet was forced to take action on the legitimacy of the government following the agreement reached by the government and the rebels last month in Addis Ababa. That is when the two sides signed a power-sharing deal in a move toward ending the 14-month-long conflict in South Sudan. Under the deal, the government and rebels are supposed to form a transitional government of national unity by July 9, 2015. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudanese opposition political parties have cautiously welcomed the government's decision to postpone general elections that were due to be held on 30th of June. Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
SPLM-DC leader Lam Akol says that the decision to delay the elections shows that sense has at long last prevailed in government. Akol's SPLM-DC led a group of opposition parties that brought a legal challenge against the elections. Last week, South Sudan's High Court said it would hear the opposition party's case, which seeks to block the National Elections Commission from holding the vote on June 30th. The parties say that under South Sudan's transitional constitution, a census has to be held before elections. The body that is supposed to organize the census has already said that would be impossible. Akol noted today that the government has no constitutional or legal authority to cancel or postpone the elections once the National Elections Commission has announced the date. He says that if they want to delay the vote, they will have to show up in court when the opposition party's case against the elections goes ahead.
The final decision will be in the Supreme Court, which will hold the next sitting on the 3rd of March. So if they are serious about stopping election, let them come to the Supreme Court and tell the Supreme Court that they are now for elections not to go ahead.
A power-sharing proposal brokered by the Regional Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, that was signed at the start of this month by President Kiir and his arch-rival in the 14-month conflict, Riek Machar, says elections should not be held until the end of 2017 at the earliest. The IGAD proposal also calls for a transitional government of national unity to be set up and remain in power for 30 months. IGAD gives the two sides until March 5th to reach a final peace deal. The government announced last week that the national vote will not be held on June 30th, but in the middle of 2017. The government also said that it intends to extend the tenures of elected officials, including President Salva Kiir and all 332 lawmakers, by 2 years. Akol lashed out at that part of the decision, saying it shows the government is mainly interested in holding on to power.
When they couldn't hold the fake elections, now they went immediately to extend their life. So if the agreement is just around the corner, why now take this decision that they want to extend their own life? It means one of two things. Either they are not serious about the peace process, and therefore they prejudge that the peace will not come. Or secondly, they take people for granted that we don't remember what they tell us, and therefore they can do anything they want.
Akol says no one's term in office should be extended until a peace deal has been reached.
If there is a peace agreement, then of course the peace agreement means the constitution will be amended to give the new transitional government 30 months in power. If there is no agreement, then the decision is a decision of the people, not a decision of the government.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
South Sudan's Information Minister, Michael Makui, used today's news conference to repeat a warning he made last year for media houses and journalists not to publish or broadcast interviews with rebels inside South Sudan. He warned that if they do, they would face harsh punishment. VOA fellow Michael Atit has this report.
Makui's warning came after United Nations radio station Miraya FM aired a pre-recorded interview this morning with one of the opposition officials who defected from the President Kiir administration when the crisis broke out in December 2013. Makui's latest warning is the first of 2015. The information minister issued the stern caution at this morning media briefing about a cabinet resolution on delaying elections and extending the terms of President Kiir and the national lawmakers. Makui says the government will follow through and punish anyone who ignores the warning.
We are shutting you down if you interview any rebel here to disseminate his or her plans and policies within South Sudan. I'm sorry, we will shut down that way. It has never happened in the world where you find views of the rebels being disseminated by media houses which are inside the country.
Makui also repeated something said last year when he first made the warning, that journalists who go ahead and publish or broadcast interviews with armed opposition are agitators and rebels themselves and will suffer the consequences.
If you can go as far as interviewing the rebels to come and disseminate their filthy ideas to the people and poison their minds, that is a negative agitation. You will either join them or else we put you where you will not be talking.
Journalists and rights groups say that though there were some limits in free speech in South Sudan before the conflict, the crisis has made the situation worse. Several media houses have been closed, newspapers have had their entire prints run seized, and many journalists have been arrested or detained, including several this month. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
Simon Wakiwudu prepared this report in Juba. In Khartoum, a media watchdog says Sudanese security officers today seized the operations of 13 newspapers in one of the most sweeping crackdowns on the press in recent history. Journalists for Human Rights say Sudan's intelligence and security services seized the copies of both pro as well as independent dailies without explanation. The Sudanese Journalist Network say the steep rise in newspaper seizures by security forces represent an unprecedented escalation by the authorities against the freedom of press and expression. The editor of Al-Tahrir, Osman Margani, told AFP security officers arrived at his premises shortly after today's printing and seized all copies without giving a reason. The journalist group say it will stage a sit-in outside the government-run press council to protest the raids. Other newspapers seized in today's crackdown include Al-Rayalam, Al-Intibah, Akhir Lahza, Al-Watan, and Al-Sudani Paper. Since Friday was United Nations World Radio Day, a day set aside to focus on the role of radio in educating, informing, and entertaining listeners worldwide, we decided to ask some of you how important radio is in your lives.
I'm Muki Batal. I really like the radio. The radio has played a vital role in South Sudan. It has normally bring people together and they share their differences, and by that, it's really a great role.
My name is Maha Sudik. I think radio is the best. Yeah, because, you know, there are some people who cannot offer, you know, to buy a newspaper. Or sometimes the newspaper don't reach those people who are living, like, in rural areas. But through radio, people can get all the news.
I am Idian Zakaria. Actually, before the crisis, I didn't listen to radio that much. But even after the crisis, I don't listen to radio much. And even the peace talks, I don't think there are many programs talking about peace talks in radios now in South Sudan.
If I want something outside country, if I want to get some information outside country, or something that is happening in those war areas, of course, radio is my thing. I don't just hit the internet and get the information. I listen to radio because I know the information is authentic. So I depend on it a lot of time.
You know, radio listening means a lot to me because radio nowadays, it's everything to me. Like, I listen to music through the radio. I get information from there. I listen to radio so much all the time. I get information that I need, like my basic information.
I think as for me, I've been fan of radio almost like 6 years from now. I've been fan of radio, so I like radio so much, especially BBC. Yeah. So what radio does for me and the entire society of Africa is that it gives a lot of education, educative messages, and some formulative systems whereby especially students like me, I'm doing communication studies, so it is really significant. It has changed the life of people like me and another student who is doing that and other people who needs information.
It means a lot. One, it is entertaining. Two, it is helping me to grow, yani, mentally. There are more lessons that we learn from radio. I don't defend on radio only. I watch TV, I tweet, I Facebook, and I Google emails to get information from everywhere. So I don't rely on radio only.
By listening to radio, it means a lot to me. Because it's that way you can find many information of the world. So it's very important for us. They play many roles to me. Because for any case, I can understand what happened to the world. I depend on the radio.
These are voices of South Sudanese on the use of radio. The United Nations points out that radio is the most accessible and commonly used form of media in South Sudan. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The government denies new accusations that it continues to recruit children in its army. That story is coming up after this break.
South Sudan In Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan In Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who in your family is the disciplinarian?
My father, he wakes up early in the morning. He makes sure that we prepare everything before we go to school. He doesn't want nonsense.
The disciplinarian in my family is my mother. She scolds you when you do something wrong, and then if there's need, she whips you, you know, just to correct you.
My senior brother is the same person who is the disciplinarian in the family, because he was just like as the head of the family at then. He's the one who gives and do punishment in the house.
In our family, the only disciplinarian that I know is my dad. Mostly, when we commit an offense to him or at the family, you know, normally he calls us together and, yeah, advises us on two things that we are going astray.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A rights group says Sudan government and the opposition forces in South Sudan continue to recruit child soldiers despite promises they would stop. Human Rights Watch says some of the boys are as young as 13. VOA's Jordi Kapua reports.
Estimates of child soldiers in South Sudan range from the hundreds to the thousands. Human Rights Watch says recruiting child soldiers is a war crime when those children are younger than 15. It calls on both sides to issue clear orders barring recruitment of all children under 18. HRW researcher Sky Wheeler works in South Sudan.
We know for sure that both sides have recruited and used many, many children in this conflict, and we're very worried to see that this practice is continuing now in the town of Malakal.
Government forces are in control in Malakal in Upper Nile State.
What our research has shown is that over the Christmas period and in early January especially, there was a spike in recruitment in Malakal, and that included people who were underage children, including kids as young as 13. We spoke to many mothers whose kids had willingly gone off to join these forces, other kids who had been taken by force from Malakal town, but in several cases from right outside of the UN base.
Wheeler says about 20,000 civilians are still seeking refuge at that base.
We spoke to one mum who went over across the river to the barracks on the other side there and met with her kid and tried to persuade him to come home, and he said he wouldn't come home. And another mother who went over to try and get her kid back saw him actually being taken away on a boat together with lots of other children in an army boat.
The Human Rights Watch researcher says she spoke to a number of former child soldiers who were recruited to fight last year.
I spoke to one young guy recently. Last year he was 16 when he went to school one morning and was picked up together with dozens of other children, thrown in the back of a truck, driven for a day, and then forced to fight the next day for the first time in his life. I mean, these are quite extraordinary stories. I spoke to a couple of kids who have said that they were persuaded to join the opposition forces from the POC, the Protection of Civilians site in Bentiu, for example. Members of the opposition would enter the base, start talking with the kids, and persuade them to go and fight with them.
Wheeler says child soldier recruitment is widespread in the country. South Sudan's 2008 Child Act forbids the use of child soldiers. It sets a minimum age of 18 for either conscription or for voluntarily joining armed groups.
This conflict has really taken us back, many, many steps backwards in that process. The SDLA established a whole mechanism with officers whose job was to make sure that there were no children in any of the barracks. And actually, South Sudan, although it did still have child soldiers, had made quite considerable steps towards having a child-free army.
Another problem is that many schools have been taken over by armed groups. Wheeler says that's despite both sides agreeing last year that they would not do so, as well as recommitting themselves to not using child soldiers. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan government officials called the Human Rights Watch allegations nonsense. The rebels also deny charges that they continue to recruit child soldiers. For VOA News, Philip Thonalehu has the story from Juba.
Minister of Information and Broadcasting, Michael Makwe, says there is nothing new in the latest Human Rights Watch report alleging recruitment of children into the army. Makwe accuses Human Rights Watch of recycling old reports.
These are reports being conducted. Every now and then they attend this way, next time they attend this way, that time they attend this way. That is the type of report they are writing. There is only one situation in which child soldiers appear, and that is in Unity State. And these children are rebel soldiers.
SPLM in opposition military spokesman Luruai Kwang says since signing an agreement last year with UNICEF to release all child soldiers within their rank, they have been working to implement that agreement.
They were given very clear instructions in May by the chairman to stop recruiting child soldiers. Other orders were made for any child soldiers that may have joined our forces voluntarily to be demobilized. And from May up to this time, we have been waiting for UNICEF to embark on fact-finding mission. They've been keeping quiet.
As for the government, Makui says it has many recruits and does not need to rely on children to fill out its rank and file.
We have sufficient people who are above age, who want to get recruited, because after this it is no longer a voluntary army. It is a paid army. How can you recruit a child so that you come and pay him? We have no child soldiers. But because these people want to make sure that the two parties are held tied together, this is why they all the time write such nonsense.
Makui says the authors of the Human Rights Watch report did not visit battlefields, but rather simply write the reports in the capital.
These are people who sit here and write their reports. They don't go to the ground. And they must write something so that their money continues to flow. These are some of the problems of this foreign-funded organization being driven by their masters, and the employees must make sure that they must write what their masters want so that they are paid.
Both sides have been accused of recruiting children in the past. The latest Human Rights Watch report describes the possible switching of children from Malakal in the capital of Upper Nile State. It also says more children join the army voluntarily. Human Rights Watch says the army commanders of both sides must give clear instructions to their subordinate not to recruit children into active duty, saying such action amount to war crimes. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
VOA fellow Lucy Pony contributed to this report. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The Egyptian military says Egyptian and Libyan warplanes bombed Islamic State group targets in eastern Libya today in swift retaliation for the massacre of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians. The airstrikes hit militant camps and weapons storage sites in the town of Darna hours after the Islamic State group released a video purporting to show the beheadings of the men who had been held hostage in Libya. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi had pledged in a televised speech to respond to the killings, calling them an abhorrent act of terrorism. The Nigerian army says a town in Borno State seized by Boko Haram insurgents last month has been recaptured. The army said on its Twitter feed today that military operations to clear terrorists from Mungono and other communities were successful. It said the operation involved airstrikes and led to the capture of a number of insurgents, as well as truckloads of food and supplies meant for Boko Haram fighters in the town of Baga. And finally, Ukraine's government and Russian-backed rebels are accusing each other of violating a ceasefire intended to end the fighting in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine's Foreign Minister Pavlo Klimkin said today Ukrainian forces have come under fire 112 times in the past day from rebels in the cities of Donetsk and Luhansk. The military said rebel attacks on the key railway town of Debaltseve have increased, with the separatists using all types of weapons. A Reuters correspondent in Volhorysk, about 10 kilometers to the west, reported heavy shelling in the vicinity of the town and blasts about every 10 seconds. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
With memories of the African Cup of Nations final between Ghana and Ivory Coast still fresh in the minds of many, South Sudanese football fans were treated to a game at Juba Football Stadium this past weekend between local champions Malakia Football Club and the reigning Nigerian League champions Kano Pillars. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
The excitement was palpable at Juba Stadium Saturday afternoon as South Sudanese Malakia FC put up a spirited fight against Kano Pillars in the first round of the African Club Champions League. Bashir Edilis Mwazu, chairman of the Kano Pillars Football Club, says he was delighted to be in Juba for the match.
I enjoy my stay in South Sudan, so I would be happy one day to come back and live in South Sudan.
Football fan Ramze Sagam, a second-year medical student at Juba University, was happy to be at the game.
I could see the fans of Nigeria could really boost their players, and I could also see the fans of Malakia really boosting their players as well. This seems to have been the first international match I've watched between my team from South Sudan and a team from outside, so I really feel so excited.
Nigeria's Gambo Mohammed and the first goal of the game just 4 minutes after the start of the second half. But local fans were not yet ready to give up, even when Christian Obiazo kicked a cracker 63 minutes into the match. Despite Saturday's loss 0-2, fans like Sagam believe South Sudan can still qualify for the next round when the two teams meet again during the second leg in Nigeria.
We can win there, because if you could see, it's just a couple of mistakes that has really led to our loss. If at all we actually manage to pull our socks up, we shall be able to beat the Nigerian team from their home.
Malakia Football Club coach Ramze Sebit says Sagam is right.
No impossible under the sun, but there are some difficulties. I accept it, but I never surrender, because I take this example from our hero, Dr. John Garang Dimavio. We are never surrender, and I have a hope.
He blamed the loss on Saturday's extremely enthusiastic fans, who may have made his still inexperienced players nervous. He says his young team is not used to such applause, and they have uphill battle. South Sudan is ranked 147 places below Nigeria in the latest FIFA rankings. But Liloanu Idris Malekawa, media relations officer for the Nigerian team, says South Sudan is just learning how to perform on the international stage.
They are very hospitality, and I'm telling you, when they come to Kano, Nigeria, they will see how we are going to repeat the same hospitality to them. We are very grateful.
And fans like 24-year-old Banan Fok, who plays for rival club Al Hilal, say South Sudan players and fans can hold their heads high.
So yes, I'm here to support my second team, Al Malakia Juba, because I'm South Sudanese. I'm just supporting the team because of we are the same nation and the same country.
For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Public Enemy by Ras Corby.
Yes, that's the eye, the king of Israel, seen most I chose Rastafari. Know anytime righteousness and consciousness come forward. People always want to kill it down scene. Bless the Most High. Original Rascal be life and direct. So Sudan is liberated. Yeah. Watch it.
They call me a public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy.
Say, I'm not a Lebanese, a Japanese, a Chinese. I'm proud to be a Southern Sudanese.
They call me a public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy.
Say, anytime I wanna talk about my people's rights,
they call me a warrior.
Anytime I wanna talk about equal rights and justice,
they call me a criminal.
Don't forget about the fact that present before you make your judgment.
Don't forget about the past and the present before you make your judgment.
Do you remember the days of slavery when our forefathers were taken across the Atlantic? It was a pity. Hey. I heard about reparations.
Just like the vision.
We have been listening to Russ Corby with that song, Public Enemy. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Harvesting season, man, this is what you wait. Cloud now, celebrate with the raindrop. Land of that green grass, please don't stop.